Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, whoop.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 19, week 13, part 1. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson. How was that Hogs game this weekend? I saw you tweeting live from there.
Tweeting live from a fantastic crowd of about 26,000 people. Probably about 13,000 people by the time we got to the second quarter. So it was a fantastic morning of football.
We almost had our Moneyline underdog parlay. We got Duke. Arkansas, I feel like they were in control of that game. What happened?
They had the lead the entire game till 17 seconds left. But, you know, a lot of that was gifts in the beginning of the game. Mississippi State was pinned down at their own goal, and Fitzgerald got hit, you know, funky a couple times and gave the Hogs the ball immediately in their red zone, was able to convert and get some points off of that. So, and then from then on, it was, you know, Arkansas was just lucky to even get a couple more points in the second half. The old second half swoon that we're all familiar with Brett Bielema showed its ugly head, and with 17 seconds left, they took the lead, had a terrible 4th-and-2 call at the end of the game, and Bielema said in the press conference later on that he was going to do everything he could to get this win for him. So I guess that includes going, you know, 4th-and-2 with a couple minutes left from your own 45. But, you know, yeah, what's he coaching for these days, right? He's going to get paid. He's getting his buyout.
Yeah, I mean, that was a hell of a throw by Fitzgerald, by the way, at the end to win it. Yep. I mean, they probably would have kicked the field goal anyway, but that was a hell of a throw. So I saw you go back to the well. Is that so? You saw enough to go back to Arkansas this weekend?
I did. I think Missouri has. Yeah, I mean, just to get right into that, I think, you know, Missouri's bowl qualified now. They got their 6 wins. You know, Odom got them fired up. Missouri's going ballistic. I mean, I even thought the Vandy line was too high. They're still blowing people away. I think the same effort that we got from the Hogs defense, at least the one that I saw that was tackling and getting in the backfield in the first half, I think we're going to get that same intensity, whatever level it is, whatever talent these guys have. We're going to get that from Missouri, too. So I think that they're going to be able to get a cover here. I don't think Missouri is going to be as intensive they've last been their last, what, 5 weeks. So, you know, there's a little bit of cushion there. They've got bowl eligible, so they could even afford to maybe even lose this game and still be okay with Odom saving his job.
Yeah, that was the first road win for Missouri since November 2014 when they won at Tennessee. So we just got done watching the Falcons hold on, thanks to Pete Carroll chewing his gum, just fucking up that entire game all the way through. I don't know what the hell was that fake field goal at the end of the first half, and then you know, wasting timeouts on just nonsensical challenges, and then Blair Walsh is short from 52. It's like, get a kicker.
Yeah, how are you not making 52 yarders in the NFL? The straight with no wind, no nothing. Are you not making 52 yarders? So thank God for Blair Walsh. At the same time, I don't think Atlanta's a team that I'm going to be looking to play on, or like, no lead is safe. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, that team, they just are so fragile. It feels like at the end of games, they're just waiting for everything bad to happen. I don't know how Blair Walsh keeps getting work. I mean, he got cut last year, and then this year, yeah, so last year he got cut, I believe, after a week 10 loss where he missed an extra point. And this year through 10 weeks, guess what? He was the same exact makes and misses, same exact percentage. I don't know how this guy keeps fooling everyone. And it's not like you can't find kickers. I mean, there are kickers out there. I mean, look at the dude, that kid Butker, whoever, that came from Georgia Tech. I mean, he's kicking well for the Chiefs. I mean, you can find kickers. Blair Walsh is not, you know, a hot commodity. He's proven this. It's crazy. But, yeah, we went 5. That made us go 5-0 in the Super Contest. 4-1 last week. So we're in it. I mean, we're not in it to win the whole thing. But we can get in the money if we finish strong, right?
Yeah, we're 3 games out. You know, there's 30 picks to go. We're 3 games out of 50th place. So we're going to need some help. But we got to keep up the 4-1, hopefully 5-0 pace. And this is where, you know, working as a team with you, if anybody's followed me in the past, last 3 or 4 years I've been in the Super Contest, it's been great. It's been like 65% up until Thanksgiving. And then I get absolutely murdered because I'm always into this short home dog thing, and I ignore, you know, teams playing, you know, favorites playing at home in December is usually a pretty good bet, and I always am looking to sniff a dog. So this is the time of year where things usually bust down, so I'm glad I have a partner to end this thing.
Yeah, I usually end strong in the NFL, so hopefully we can keep that up this year. I'm amazed that I'm ended up on a Ravens future, but here we are. If anyone checked out the piece last week, invested them at 155-1. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. We said this last week. I mean, in order for them not to make the playoffs, you know, they have a 50% chance to make it if they go 8-8. But in order to go 9-7, you know, they just have to beat the Browns, Bengals at home, the Colts at home, and the Texans at home. And they go 9-7. And then the only way they get beat is if the Bills could go 5-2 to get the 10 wins. They play the Patriots twice. They're at Kansas City this week, and they're just a mess. So in order for any of the other 4-6 teams to hop the Ravens, including the Chargers, who I love, they're going to have to go 6-0 because the Ravens either have head-to-head victories or a better conference record. So, I mean, if they go 9-7, it's about a 98 to 99% chance that they're going to get in. And that's assuming that they lose at home to the Lions, which I think they win that game. So they're going to get in and they're going to play the Jags, and I'm going to be on them as a dog, and then I'll be on them as a dog in Foxborough the week after. So we'll see. It'll be fun for the ride. I'm going to the Ravens game in Cleveland and the Ravens game against the Colts. So it'll be give me a little more incentive to freeze my ass off in the cold. So anyway, before we get into part one of the Degen and Juice podcast, and if you have listened in the past, well, now we are up on iTunes, which is nice. The first part, we go through the weekend that was, kind of recap from a betting perspective what happened, what we learned, what it means going forward. Then we'll run through some of the top 25 marquee games. And then for this week, you know, since it's an odd schedule given the holiday, we're going to go through the weekday games that include all the MAC and then also the Egg Bowl, which is the only game on Thursday. So we'll cover all the MAC, which is on Tuesday and Friday. And then on part two of the podcast, which we're actually going to release on Wednesday, since, you know, there's so many games on Friday and Saturday, I want to get it out as soon as possible. You know, then we'll go through all of the games on Friday and Saturday with fine-tooth comb from a capping perspective, and try to get a profitable weekend for all of you out there on this Thanksgiving weekend. Before we dive into the weekend recap, though, I do want to give a shout out to Hook'em Nation. Texas comes through for us and beats West Virginia for that win total. Absolutely massive. And we pretty much cleared the board with our big win totals.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I walked out of Razorback Stadium and saw the Will Greer finger image on the timeline. I was so thankful because I knew, you know, without Will Greer, West Virginia's chances of winning that game, I think that happened, though. They were already down, I think, by a touch when that happened. So I was pretty happy about that because I knew this was OU week and West Virginia probably didn't have a chance in hell to win this week. So I appreciate the push. I'm glad I'm going to get some of that money back.
Yep. All right. So let's get into the weekend recap. I had a miserable weekend. I mean, I just got fucked every which way. Ohio State up 38-0 midway through the second quarter, and then Illinois plays them even the rest of the way. 100 total yards on 44 plays, and they score 14 points. Their fourth string quarterback came in. He has one play from scrimmage, and it's a touchdown run against Ohio State in his career. That was miserable. Penn State was miserable. At least Wofford tackled South Carolina. UTSA at least made a field goal at the end, but there was just some bad capping and some bad breaks mixed in, but I got worked. So favorite game and best call, I don't have many to choose from, but my favorite game, I'll say ULM, one of the few things that was going well early in the day. Never really had to sweat it. And my best call was Duke. You know, I had him in the money line parlay, had him plus 7. And they rolled. It was close in the first half, and then they extended, and it was pretty sweat free. How about you? Favorite game, best call?
Yeah, so favorite game for me was Wisconsin, and I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of people I know that have Michigan on this game, but you know, for me, it's good to have some breaks go your way throughout the season, and not everything is going to be a Stanford UCLA 2016 strip six, you know? So, you know, it's good to have some breaks go your way. It's good to see, you know, Michigan get down to the red zone and then fuck it up. And, you know, I liked Wisconsin winning this and covering this because it gives us more value in the Ohio State line coming up in the Big Ten championship, which is really my ultimate goals. I just think they're going to slam dunk, you know, Wisconsin, not to give that away. But, you know, Wisconsin winning and covering here is going to pay off if you're going to take the Buckeyes in the Big Ten championship coming up. I didn't plan on Wisconsin having a passing game. So that, I mean, that really kind of what got it into my favorite game category. As far as best call, it's really, you know, I feel like I didn't have a great weekend capping either. I went 6-6 on the Sports Action app. The CW9 went 4-5. And so, you know, it was kind of like going to a blackjack dealer and just pushing money back and forth. You know, it's kind of like we were just trading, you know, bets in the entire day. So it wasn't really a big day. But Duke, Wisconsin, Arkansas, UTSA, probably the best call. But, you know, I'll go with Duke, outright dog winner.
Yeah, that Michigan game was miserable. They should have covered. I mean, I don't understand reviews sometimes. That kid clearly scored a touchdown, and then they don't overturn it, and then they fumble at the one. Wisconsin scores on a punt return. Michigan's quarterback gets hurt. Then Wisconsin gets outside of the number, converting like 3rd and 16 and 3rd and 13 through the air. I mean, just a comedy of errors that it took to get Wisconsin there. But, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Worst call, I could put out so many here. Western Carolina got their doors blown off. Texas Tech are horrendous. I've tailed you in college football more winners than losers. I tailed you on Oak State.
Yep.
I had no idea what happened with Oak State. Kansas State is, I can't figure them out. And then my bet regret is Louisville. I mean, without Dungy, Syracuse is nothing. And I wanted to play Louisville, never got around to it, and then just saw them keep scoring and scoring and scoring. So that was my bet regret. How about you? Worst call, bet regret?
Yeah, worst call. I was going to say Texas Tech, but they did win the yardage battle. They lost the turnover battle 2-1. So, you know, it was just a matter of execution with them. But Oklahoma State's by far the worst call. I have rode them so many times in the CW9. And this week, I just saw so many deficiencies in what Kansas State's been doing on the defensive line. And I thought Oklahoma State was going to be able to, you know, I thought Rudolph was going to be able to have his day with him. He had over 400 yards last year, so I didn't think anything would be any different. And, you know, I can't figure Kansas State out now. And that's 2 weeks in a row I've completely whiffed on a Kansas State line. So, you know, it's time for me to step back from Wildcats and from Bill Snyder and watch them maybe a little bit closer without having any investment inside of it. So, Brett Regret, Mizzou, once again, I pass on them for the CW9. I thought the point spread against Vandy was a little too high. I thought the week before the point spread was a little too high. And I just thought, well, this is the pet price I've got to pay for a fired up team is playing defense. Andrew Locke's going nuts. So I laid off that game once again. And here they are beating Vandy 45-17. Now bowl eligible. I think the rest of the world's kind of caught on to them. So you're going to see a little flipperoo here this week with me back in Arkansas.
Yeah, by the time this comes out, my Moose piece will be out. But that's one of the games, the top 10 biggest mooses of the weekend is Missouri Vanderbilt over 64.5. It ended 45-17. Vanderbilt, their last three drives, they had first and goal from the 5, the 8, and the 9. They kicked a field goal once, turned it over on downs the other time, and then threw a pick the other time. And then people who bet the over came up 2.5 points short.
How did these guys beat Kansas State?
Yeah, I don't know. They just look miserable. I mean, Shermer threw for 350 yards, but yeah, I mean, they just couldn't punch it in the end zone. They're a bad football team. Three things learned. I'm going to go with SMU can't stop a nosebleed. Oh, my God, that defense is horrendous. I mean, even when they came, there was a lightning delay, and then they came back out, and then Memphis was just handing it off up the middle because you couldn't throw it, and then they would just run for 60 yards. I mean, SMU's defense is embarrassing. FCS awareness. So, you know, I only ended up on all those games that we circled, I only ended up playing Western Carolina, Wofford, who covered, and then ULM, who I'll throw in that category. So I went 2-1, but for the most part, all of the, you know, FBS teams covered. And, I, you know, is that just a blip? because, I mean, that hasn't really happened in any one year of the last six or seven. Or are they becoming, you know, you always hear the coach speak, you know, we're not going to overlook these teams. Is it that, you know, it's happened so much where these teams are playing close that now they're taking them a little more serious? I don't know. It's just one data point. So it's something to keep in mind going forward. Because, you know, I mean, granted, there was also some bad teams playing. I mean, Delaware State is bad. You know,
they're Mercer. Delaware State is third from the bottom of all teams in the Sagarin ratings. Like 300 teams, they're third from the bottom. That's how bad they are.
Yeah, I mean, Mercer's not, you know, as good as they've been. Citadel's not as good as they've been. And I don't know what happened with Western Carolina.
They needed this game to make the playoff, and they didn't make the FCS playoffs. I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah, and they got ran out of the building by North Carolina. And then the other thing is I had Virginia. Almost got fucked on that too. But I took a bad number early, 17. Luckily, there was a missed extra point. And which you don't expect from Miami. But Miami feels like Clemson of last year. I mean, where they are beating any, like, they show up and beat any team that's good. And I guess it's kind of Clemson this year. But then any team that's poor, they're almost losing and then finding a way to win. I mean, before you go through your three things learned, I'm curious to get your takeaways on that game. Is that just, you know, hey, they were kind of flat? Or is there something more to, you know, Kurt Benkert going bonkers, throwing, you know, four touchdowns, 385 yards, and just big play after big play? So well, I think your thoughts on that, and then your three things learned.
It's funny. My number one thing, it actually starts off with Miami. Curious enough here. So, you know, the thing about Miami is that was an early kick game. They didn't have half the people in that crowd. I think Miami's a target now. People are getting, you know, Miami's getting people's best games, and that includes Virginia. You know, Miami has these, they rely on the big play and they rely on the turnover. So there's gaps where if you're an efficient ball club, which Clemson very much is, you're going to be able to push them around and kind of eat clock and play keep away. And if you protect the ball against them, then you're going to be able to, you know, you're going to be able to have your way. So I think a lot of that happened for a little while with Virginia, but in the end, you know, it was Miami still. That'll lead right into my number one, which is, you know, Miami was still able to generate three turnovers. And even in a flat spot, even, you know, after the big games against Notre Dame and Virginia Tech and all of that, you know, they were able still to come down to earth and kind of pull this one out and get the cover. And it does feel a lot of Clemson 2016-ish. They don't have Deshaun Watson. So Miami was able to generate three turnovers in a flat spot. And the way to beat Miami is play very well in protecting the ball, play efficient football, which means moving the chains and eating clock and keeping the big play from their side off. And that's how you have to beat them. Now, Clemson is 43rd. I'm doing a little look ahead here. Pitt's not the team I think is going to beat them. It would have been nice if Pitt would have got the upset over Virginia Tech so that we'd had a win for a bowl scenario here on Friday. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think Pitt will cover. We'll talk about that. But I don't think they're going to beat them outright. So Clemson is 43rd in turnover margin. So they're not exactly fantastic in protecting the ball either. But a huge key to the, you know, ACC championship is Clemson's efficiency on offense and defense, eating clock, getting them to, you know, go three and out and protecting the ball. And if a team can't do that, then Miami's just going to run all over you. Second point for things learned, UNT and North Texas and Florida Atlantic, they're scheduled to play each other down at Boca Raton for the conference championship over there in Conference USA. And they've already played each other this year, and they scored 100 points in that game. So I don't care what the total is. There's going to be an over bet on it because North Texas is putting 50 up on everybody. That offense is just it's night and day from what it was last year. You watch a Mean Green game, and it's just points galore. So next week, have it circled. The Owls, the Mean Green, I don't see how any total under 80 is not being hit for the over in that game. You know, number three, don't count out 0-9 teams when you're trying to make some money. So I said this, I think, on the pod last week, and I was telling some of the closest people I'm with on Twitter offline that, you know, South Alabama has never beaten Georgia Southern. They had played each other five times previously to last week, and they have not beaten Georgia Southern. And I think it's what Georgia Southern does on offense is very it's problematic to try to, you know, get game ready for in a 6-day span. The way that they run their option is, you know, they've been running it forever, and you only see it once a year. And if you're not prepared for it, you're just going to get run out of the building. And that's exactly what happened to South Alabama again for the sixth time playing Georgia Southern. So, you know, you're going to see some of these games we have this week. It could be just hangover. It could be overlooker. It could be style of play, or it could be I think we have a team coming up here that we're fading. They've never seen the triple option ever. So, you know, you just have to look for these kinds of things. Even with 0-9 teams that can't cover and have never won a game, you can still try to make money off them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other thing is, we'll go through in the second part of this podcast, and we'll go through bowl motivation. Doesn't always mean that that's a lock, that the team's going to win or cover. You know, sometimes a bowl means more to one team than, you know, a certain program like a UTSA or a Buffalo, which we'll get into, who's never won a bowl. In their program history, they're 0-2. And then also, you know, it does come down to the matchup, the other team. So there's other factors, but it's definitely one thing to at least consider. But it's not the end-all be-all. And yeah, your point with Miami is valid in that they do rely on the big play and the turnover. I mean, that game swung on a pick six, and then they ended on a 30-0 run in that game. So it's a good point. So let's get into the top 25 recap. So we talked about Miami, Virginia. You know, we talked about Wisconsin, Michigan, the teams that rolled. We talked about Oak State, Kansas State, how it was kind of a perplexing result. And the weird thing is the TCU didn't clinch yet, but they essentially did. So in order for TCU to not get to Arlington to play Oklahoma, this is what would have to happen this weekend. They would have to, number one, they'd have to lose to Baylor. They'd have to have Texas Tech upset Texas, and they'd have to have Iowa State beat Kansas State. If that happens, then I believe Iowa State goes, but I'm not sure. But that's the only way TCU doesn't go. Teams that rolled this weekend, you know, TCU, we talked about, Bama, Georgia, Memphis, Auburn, Central Florida, Northwestern, they're on fire. Clemson, Oklahoma, LSU, Boise, and Penn State all won comfortably. Do you see take anything away from any of those games, or just pretty much status quo?
Nah, status quo. I just, you know, the couple of notes I made, I'm laughing at the day where I was sweating if Northwestern was going to get to the season win total over. So I'm glad that's over with. Kansas State actually played really good run D, and they ate up the clock when they were on defense. I think they had the ball for over 35 minutes. Ole Miss and Texas A&M, I had Ole Miss in the CW9 at -2.5. I wrote that on Wednesday night. And by the time Friday came around, they were +2.5. So I don't know what the 5-point swing was, but they both had 391 yards on offense. And it's just a strange move by the spread. And I think that's it for the games that we just covered.
Yeah, it was weird. They were up at the half, and then they didn't score in the second half through a pick six. I don't get what that line move was. Mm-hmm. The other games that were escapes. You had the Pac-12 games were all close. You know, you had Washington absolutely shock Utah. They scored 10 points in the final minute and a half. USC barely beat UCLA. And then you had Stanford, who needed to win that game. You know, they barely beat Cal. Did you take anything away from any of those Pac-12 games?
Yeah, that this week to week, I can't figure out if the Pac-12 is on the same level as the other Power Five or if they all suck. I mean, I can't. You think Washington, look at the stats on paper, they should put teams away, and they never do. And USC, who I'd like to make a case, you know, should go to the playoff over Ohio State, not when you can't put UCLA away. So, you know, the whole conference is just struggling this year.
Yeah, it's a bad look for the Pac-12 this weekend. The only team in the top 25 that lost to a non-top 25 team was actually an underdog, and that was NC State. They went down to Wake Forest, and then you also had Sparty, very flat. I guess that'd be my bet regret, too. We talked about Maryland mm-hmm. and that under covering, and then Notre Dame barely beat Navy. The game's always close. Probably should have taken Navy as well. Any takeaways from Notre Dame and Sparty?
Oh, that was just so smart of me to say, well, there isn't any value in Navy because I think it should be a touchdown higher. You know, some of these games, they just fall in the right spot on the schedule, and some teams have other teams figured out. So, you know, I guess that's one thing to be said about looking at it and trying to find value in a number when you think it's off by 6 points. But, you know, that Navy game was definitely a lot closer. And as far as NC State goes, just keep reminding me next July and August when I keep putting tweets out about how I think this is NC State's year to break out in their division, because it never is. No matter how much talent they have, no matter how many scheduling breaks they have, it's never their year.
Yeah, I was unimpressed with a lot of teams this weekend that I thought would have came out. I really thought Ohio State, they looked like they were going to come out and make a statement. Since when is Urban Meyer taking out his starters in the second quarter?
Right.
Penn State taking out their starters in the second. Like, what are they saving their starters for? And then USC, I figured they were going to have to make a big statement to even try and get in that conversation. And they looked really flat. So let's get into the weekday games.
Before we start this, I took a log of all the win totals from beginning in the season, and I had no clue how big of a weekend this is for so many people out there that have win total tickets. So if you let me go ahead and review a couple of them real quick, because I know a lot of people probably have a lot of questions on these. So Michigan's team total was 9, and that's what they're currently sitting on. Southern Miss was on 7. They're sitting at 7. Eastern Michigan was at 4.5. They're sitting on 4 wins. Ole Miss, 5.5. They're sitting on 5 wins. There's some other big ones out there, like Texas A&M is at 7 wins. They were 7 preseason. LSU was 9 preseason. They're sitting on 8. Stanford was 8.5. They're sitting on 8 wins. Washington was 10 preseason. A lot of people took the over on that. They're sitting on 9 wins right now. UNLV was a big one. I grinded so hard on what to do with UNLV's futures. Their win total is 5.5. They're sitting on 5, and some funky line movement going on with Indiana. I'm going to Indiana. Some funky line movement with UNLV against Nevada. Indiana was at 6. They're sitting on 5 with a game against Purdue. So this is a huge weekend for win totals. I mean, there's at least 15 more of them here that I haven't even named off, from UConn to Syracuse to Tulane. And even East Carolina. So, don't trash your tickets just yet. A lot of these are going to come right down to the wire.
Good point. And do you have any that you're still sweating out?
No, we're all done. I mean, I guess that's good or bad. We went about like 7-3 and a push. So I'd like to thank Colorado State for that. But, they were all decided really early. And that's really weird. Usually you get to this point with your win totals and you have a defined route you can take, whether if you want to hedge off or whatever. The only thing that I've got outstanding right now is the couple shots I took on the Five Dimes release of Stanford winning the Pac-12 North. So I'm a monster Washington Huskies fan against Wazoo coming up this weekend.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on the second part. So let's get into the weekday games. We'll cover all the MAC on this podcast and the Egg Bowl on Thursday. We'll cover the MAC all at once. So just the only game on Thursday is Ole Miss at Miss State. Miss State's laying 16. Do you have any feel there, or does that stay away?
I would love to have Mississippi State at 14. There's a lot of things that I see in the numbers that Mississippi State should dominate them on paper. There's so much going on. Like, we don't have enough time on this podcast to talk about what's going on behind this game, other than the fact that some of the Mississippi State players took the stand and testified against some of the Ole Miss coaching staff and regime there. I mean, and the fact that, like, the penalties against Ole Miss are going to come directly after this game. And it's a lot because what happened in Mississippi State's testimony. So there is a lot of hatred going on. Don't think that these guys are going to take it easy on each other if one team gets a lead. I think Mississippi State's going to get the lead, and I think they're going to just pile it on. So that's my feeling. That's my gut play. But, I'm not sure if we're going to have any money down on it at the end of Thanksgiving night.
Fair enough. So let's get into the MAC. So the MAC is, there's a timing aspect here that because of the MAC's funky schedule, essentially what happens with the MAC is it's still up for grabs. And the way that it's going to play out this week is that so we'll start with the West and then we'll get into the games. But if Toledo wins, and Toledo, they play on Friday, they're laying over 2 touchdowns. If they win, they win the West. If they lose and Northern Illinois, and the reason that happens, it doesn't matter if Toledo wins because Toledo beat Northern Illinois. They're both 6-1 in the conference. But if Toledo loses to Western Michigan, and we'll get to that game, and Northern Illinois beats Central Michigan, Northern Illinois is a 3-point favorite at Central Michigan, Northern Illinois would go. Mm-hmm. In the East, it's on Tuesday, you have Kent State at Akron. And Akron is 5-2 in the conference, and so is Ohio. If Akron wins that game, they're 15-point favorites at home on Tuesday. They go. They just beat Ohio. It doesn't matter then what Ohio does on Friday, and they're at Buffalo. Buffalo, I played. They're catching 3.5. You know, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, they're a bowl-motivated team where a bowl means a lot. They've never won a bowl in their program history. They have a lot of momentum, and Ohio's dreams will die. I mean, it's crazy that they're not playing these games on the same day.
Right.
So let's start and work our way back. So would you agree that if Akron wins, as they should against Kent State, that Buffalo line should come down, right? You would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing goes in the this makes it easier on us. This what's going on with Maction is easier on us as a capper than say what's going on with Washington against Wazoo kicking off at the same time as Stanford and Notre Dame, because at least you would find out Stanford's, you know, I mean, if Stanford has a Pac-12 championship game to look forward to, I'm not sure they would play Notre Dame to the best of their ability, but you don't know because their fate's being decided at the same time that they're on the field. So back to the Maction here, Akron must win this for, you know, a shot at the MAC title game. They're favored by 15 points. That, you know, this has a domino effect down on what Ohio does against Buffalo. Now, both Stuck, you and I, we've taken Buffalo already. I think we got them. I got them at 4.5 and 4, down to 3.5. But certainly if Akron wins this game against Kent, which they should, you would expect Buffalo to probably rout Ohio in a spot that Ohio doesn't want to play. They have nothing to play for, and Buffalo's bowl motivated. So back to the Akron part of it, I think this number is a little too high. I have the game at 11. S&P Plus has it at 13. The current line is Akron minus 15. But, you know, Thomas Woodson's still questionable, but it didn't matter last week with the Cato Nelson kid who you called out last week. Yeah, he looked great. So even though I think the number is 4 points too high, I'm not going to run to back Kent. But, you know, if Akron would fall down just a little bit, maybe I would hit them. But this is a no play for me. Really, it's I am hoping Akron just gets the win so that I'm comfortable with my Buffalo bet, and maybe even during the game I'll hit Buffalo again because Ohio's motivation would be gone.
Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be Akron, unless Kent State pulls off the upset. And then even if Kent State does pull off the upset, Ohio still needs to win that game at Buffalo. The other game on, let's just get through the rest of the disgusting games on Tuesday. So you have Kent State at Akron on Tuesday. Other games on Tuesday, Miami of Ohio, minus 18.5, playing for nothing at Ball State. Who is Ball State? Is there any way you can bet this game?
This is going to be sick. So Miami of Ohio, 4 wins, so not really much to play for. I mean, they could get to 5. They do fall on the qualified APR list for colleges that can make a bowl game at 5, but frankly, no bowl's going to select a MAC team. They need a traveling fan base, and they'll take a Power 5 every time. So I've got this game at 15, and S&P Plus has got it at 13. So the 17.5, again, this is way too high. And I think this is just one of those things where they know that public action is going to come in on the team that they think the team is better than the other. And no one's going to be running, you know, to back Muncie here, to back Ball State. You know, believe it or not, Ball State's actually covered 4 games this year, and Miami of Ohio has only covered 2. So I think the number's too high. I would play Ball State, but I'm more than content in letting it steam out and get a little bit higher and taking the last number.
And I remember when Ball State beat UAB by 20. Yeah, I don't want any part of that game. But Bowling Green at Eastern Michigan laying 13 here. Another gross MAC game on Tuesday. Any angle?
Yeah, love EMU. I mean, they won, covered for me last week. They're just one game short here. Just so many short losses. Team is much better than what their record shows. But I have 16. S&P Plus has it at 13. So the 12.5 has definitely caught my attention. But it's moving the wrong way. Like I want to back EMU, but the line is certainly moving the wrong way. And they're taking in all the money and all the ticket counts. So maybe there's something that I'm not seeing here. Because I mean, Bowling Green's 2-10 against the spread in their last 12 games. And one of them is the 4 turnovers they got against Kent State. So, I mean, there's no injuries on the Eastern Michigan side. So I'm still digging to find out why Bowling Green is taking the bigger bets in this game, because I haven't found it in the stats. I haven't found it in injuries. I haven't found it in weather. So I'll keep digging on this one.
Okay. And then on Friday, here's a game I'm interested in Toledo. So Toledo, obviously, if they win, they're in. I want two touchdowns, and I want to lay it against Western Michigan. And here's why. I'm curious to get your take. Toledo, ton of seniors on this team that has been absolutely devastated by Western Michigan the last 2 years. I mean, they had, you know, Toledo obviously lost to that Western Michigan team that went undefeated, and then went to what bowl did they go to that year? Sugar?
I don't know.
The year they went undefeated, and they Cotton Bowl, Wisconsin. They played Wisconsin. They obviously lost to them, but they also had to play. They had a play-in game, and they were upset, I think, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they were, I mean, it was a devastating loss. And, you know, those kids, I think, have this game circled, and they want to win this game and win it big. So curious to get your thoughts here, because I'm actually looking at the favorite here.
Yeah, I actually have the same thoughts as you. The only hesitation is I thought the number was a little bit too high because I made it 11.5, but at 13.5, I'm ready to fire, and I'm ready to get in on the Toledo side. I don't think we're going to get it, though, because I'm just seeing a couple of 14s, and I don't think it's going to trickle down, so I may have to settle on that. But, you know, you're right. Western Michigan, there's a revenge angle here for Toledo. This is a senior-dominated team on Toledo, too, so they definitely, you know, have been waiting to get a piece of Western Michigan. They're on back-to-back road travel. They've covered their past two games, but don't let that fool you. They've been a benefactor of five net turnovers the last two games. Toledo's 5-1 against spread in their last six. So, you know, I'm definitely, if I start to see, you know, the fact that the juice is going not the way that I want, then Chris is currently offering 14 on Toledo, and that's the side I'm going to be on.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree. Every quote I'm reading is just, we want this game, and, you know, I think that they're going to come out on fire, and it's going to be a blowout. The other game on Friday is that we didn't already cover. We talked about Ohio, Buffalo, but it's Northern Illinois at Central Michigan. So the interesting thing, Five Dimes actually had a prop up earlier for Central Michigan to win the MAC, but that can't happen. So they are tied right now. They could end up tied. So if they win and if Central Michigan wins and Toledo loses, they all end up with two losses, but Toledo goes based on the tiebreaker. But Central Michigan is catching 3 points at home against Northern Illinois, who could potentially go to the MAC championship if Toledo loses. Those games are, I think, played at similar times. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that Central Michigan is red hot. Fire Up Chips have won 4 in a row, and they are averaging over 43 points per game in their last 4. So, you know, they're not playing to go to the MAC championship, but this is a team that's rolling. Northern Illinois has this weird outside shot. What do you see here?
Yeah, I'm going to be on Central Michigan. I was actually going to put it in the Sports Action app while we're talking here. So there's a huge contrast in Northern Illinois' efficiency versus Central Michigan's explosiveness. Now, what that means is Northern Illinois is very good at moving the chains and limiting first downs on defense, as to where Central Michigan at any point in the ball game can bust a big play on you, and you're not going to be able to bust a big play on them. So I have the number at 3, so it's spot on at 3. I kind of see, you know, a 3.5 out there, a juice 3.5 on BetOnline. So I may end up paying an extra 10 cents and getting a piece of that. But Central Michigan is the team that I want. And another note is this game is being played 30 minutes after the kickoff of the Toledo game. And I'm not sure if this happens in football. I certainly know it did when I played. But, you know, there's some scoreboard watching going on by the NIU players or NIU coaches. And if Toledo's out to a 14-21 24-point lead 30 minutes, you know, into their game, NIU comes out and sees that on the scoreboard, I'm not sure what kind of motivation they have here against a Central Michigan team that can just lay it on you if they get a shot. So it's going to be Central Michigan for me, and I'm going to take a slice at it before the game kicks.
Yeah, I mean, that would also, I remember we would scoreboard watch too. And that would also come into play at halftime. So, you know, when they go to half, Toledo will already be in the second half, and if they see that Toledo's up by 21, you know, which we think happens, then, you know, they might come out in the second half flat as hell and deflated. So yeah, I think that there's some correlation there. So I would agree with you on the Fire Up Chips as well. So thanks for running through the weekday games with me. Make sure you guys tune in on the Sports Action app and on iTunes or Audio Boom for part two of the Jen and Juice podcast, which will be out Wednesday night this week. And then look out for Colin's future piece. CW9 will be coming out on Thursday. My six pack will be coming out on Friday. I'm also going to have a guide that I'm going to put out tomorrow. Pretty easy, but it breaks down by conference who's clinched, what games mean anything, just so you can have a simple page to, you know, reference for all of this mess, especially in, you know, conferences like the MAC and the Sun Belt, which we'll get into a little bit on the second part of the podcast. And then, as always, look out for Colin's CW9 on Sunday, and then we will catch y'all next week for two more. But make sure you listen on Wednesday night, and we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
Peace out. Some sequins jeans. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in.